Shalom, Havarim. Hi, friends. So I realized that my children's time sounded like a athlete's foot commercial there. The itching, cracking, and burning. Use tough acting tenactin. Yes. But work with me here today. I'm not feeling the best. I am under the weather, and I don't usually have issues with allergies, but this year seems to be something special. Am I alone? I grew up on the farm. I was outside all the time. Never had any allergy problems. This year, I've got some scratching in my throat. I just feel tired all the time. And right now, I have this splitting headache. Now, my mother is a brilliant woman. My mother has found out how to take care of headaches. She has learned the secret to getting over this aching and pounding that you may have in your head. So just take notes right now. If you don't get anything else from this message, please learn this bit of information. My mother is one of those people that can read something very deeply and very closely and get all of the details precisely right. And my mom realized that for years, most people in the world have been misreading the label of the Tylenol bottle. So my mom realized that when you read it correctly and follow the instructions exactly as they are written, you will solve every single headache that you have. Because on every single bottle of Advil, Tylenol, and aspirin, it says, take two and keep away from children. Ed, please remember that one and tell your wife. I think she would appreciate it. She will get that. Point her in my direction. Okay. Tough crowd today. But in all seriousness, I am dealing with some of these allergy things. I will be coughing sometimes throughout this message. Please forgive me. Grace does abound. But not just that, I have had these physical problems for all of my life. I've had issues with my lower back, and I've talked about this with you all before. I was way too young. I was a teenager. I was still probably not even in, I think I was about high school age when I started having problems with my lower back. I have one of them. And you don't realize how important your lower back is until you hurt it. And when I pull my back, I have these spasms. It causes my back to kind of twist and turn, and I can't sit upright. You don't realize your back is responsible for holding you upright when you are sitting. And don't even try standing, because once you get to standing position, it's even more difficult, let alone getting to the standing position. You soon realize just how much pain you are in. I'm really quickly figuring that out. So for years, I would have these problems. And it's not even like I can bend down and I pick up 100 pounds, no problem. And that's not an issue whatsoever. I have problems whenever I have to bend down and pick up that baby doll. I have problems whenever I have to go and tie my shoe, something like that. That's why I wear a lot of slip-on shoes. So I have these problems, and when my back does go out, I often have a wonderful chance to catch up on my Netflix. So that is a good thing about it. So a few years ago, after these years of suffering through these lower back pains, I found some exercises that really helped me to kind of loosen up and to free myself from these pains. And I've noticed that all of these exercises are named after animals. You may recognize some of them. I do things like downward facing dog. I do cow cats. And I do the cobra. Anybody else do these? Just me and Ed. Yeah, well, and I show them to you right now if you wanted, but you know, we only have so much time. So I after the service, I do these positions. I find some relief from my back pain, and it's very helpful. And of course, these are not just any exercises. These are very specific. This is a genre of exercise. We know this as yoga. So I'm a young man at this time. I'm feeling like I'm aging well past my years. My lower back is causing me issues. I'm finding some relief by doing these yoga poses. And at this time, I'm also getting really serious about my Christianity. And I start following a pastor that's in Seattle. And this is a mega church pastor. And he's talking about wonderful things that are drawing these people to his churches. And he's planting different churches in different states and in different places. And a wonderful guy to listen to and to learn from and grow from. And one day I hear his sermon, and this pastor talks about yoga. And he's telling us how yoga is evil, how yoga is of the devil, yoga is demonic. And I'm just like, well, you know, these sorts of things are giving me relief. These sorts of things are helping me out. How can they be demonic? Now, for this guy, he was looking at yoga as a way to practice Hinduism. For him, it was the chanting to the gods. For him, it was these prayers to these various deities that he saw as being a problem. But what I want to do is simply dig into the scriptures a little bit, to dig into this religion, because for me, I don't really know much about Hinduism. I don't have much background with this particular religion. So we're going to dig a little deeper, and I know I promised you guys last time that we're going to look at Hinduism and Buddhism today, but as I started writing it today, I just didn't have time to cover all of these religions. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at Hinduism today, and maybe if we come back to this in a few months, we might look at Buddhism as well. Imagine that Buddhism is essentially Hinduism without the gods. Can we say that? Good. All right, we'll come back to it later. It's much more complicated than that. So anyway, so we've been working through this sermon series for the last month on the world's religions. And I said these aren't simply world's religions anymore. These are Stanton's religions. These are religions that are in our own back doors. People that we know probably practice things like Islam or Judaism or Hinduism. And we're doing this not because all religions are essentially the same, actually completely the opposite. We're doing this because we want to explore what other religions believe. And we're also trying to push out a little bit what Jesus called the greatest commandment and the second greatest commandment. I forgot to go through this with the children. Maybe you all can help me out here. Let's read this together. The greatest commandment and the second greatest commandment are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So we do believe that Jesus calls us to use our brains, to dig deeper, to learn more. And when Jesus is pushed on this question of who is my neighbor, he goes to the story of the Good Samaritan, a person on the outside of his tradition. Now, over the last few weeks, as we have looked at Islam and Judaism, I've realized that what I'm trying to learn from these different religious traditions is not so much about their theology, but their practices. I'm not trying to ask the question, what do they think about God and how can we apply that to our own religion, kind of like a la carte Christianity, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. What I'm saying is some of these religions do things a lot better than we do. For instance, we talked about Judaism. And Judaism, I said, they do a wonderful job of wrestling with their idea of who God is and remembering the things that God has done for them. I talked about Islam last week. We talked about how Islam, people that are Muslims will pray us under the tables, praying 5 times a day. And they beat us when it comes to fasting. My biggest fast is to go from like 10 p.m. until 7 a.m. I don't know much about fasting, but you know, Ramadan starts just in another week. Many Muslims will give up food and drink for the entire day, for an entire month. So we're learning from these practices. And what Jesus was explaining from the story of the Good Samaritan was how we can learn from the practices of the Good Samaritan as well, helping other people in their time of need. So what we're going to do now is we're going to look at Hinduism. I'm going to give you some background on this religion, and then we're just going to explore just what Hindus believe. And before we get into this, I should just say this one gives me a little more pause. I feel a little less comfortable discussing Hinduism. In part because I know so little about Hinduism, but also because this is so much different than all the other religions we've looked at. We look at Islam, we look at Judaism, all these stem out of the history of Abraham. These are the three Abrahamic religions. These are all people of the book. These are all people that lift up the same scriptures, the Torah, as holy. But Hindus believe something totally different. So Hinduism. Hinduism is the oldest of the major world religions. Hinduism traces back well before the beginning of Judaism, well before the birth of Abraham. There are approximately 1 billion adherents, that's billion with a B, adherents to Hinduism. And 1/4 of the subcontinent of India identifies as Hindu. So that means not all Hindus live in India, but 4/5 of the continent itself is filled with Hindus. There is no founder of Hinduism. You can't trace it back to one person like Abraham or Jesus or Muhammad. And there's no central leadership today. And because there's no central leadership and no founder, you're going to find that it's very diverse and it is the least dogmatic of all religions. You will never find a Hebrew person, or I'm going to make that mistake, I apologize, a Hindu person that looks at another Hindu and says, "You're not a real Hindu." They just kind of accept all people as a part of their tradition. Okay, so I want to look at this quote from Stephen Prothero. I quoted him in our first week of this sermon series. And Prothero says this. He says Hinduism is an over-the-top religion. And he doesn't mean that in a defamatory way. He says Hinduism is an over-the-top religion of big ideas, bright colors, soulful mantras, spicy foods, complex rituals, and wise stories. Now, if you go into like an Indian food restaurant today, you'll notice the spicy food, right? You'll notice the bright colors. You'll see the different the saris that the women wear. It is indeed an over-the-top religion. And one of my favorite Hindu religious festivals is known as Holi. H-O-L-I. If you have an iPhone, it probably came up automatically in March. And you're like, what is Holi? Or who is she? And why am I having her on my calendar? Nobody else? Just me. Okay. Holi is a festival of color. It celebrates the love between two different Hindu deities. And the thing I love about Holi is the way they celebrate it is they dry down these different flowers. And they make this very colorful powder. And they celebrate by throwing that powder at each other. Not kidding. This is how they celebrate. So to celebrate the love of these two deities, they go up to their friends and they throw this dried flower at them. And this is the way they look at the end of the day. And we as Christians, we have nothing comparable to that. And I think that should change. Right? To celebrate the love between Danny and Francis, next week we're going to start throwing flowers at each other and make each other all color. No, it's a wonderful thing. But that's what he's trying to say. Is it's over the top. And for many of us in the Western world, it's beautiful and maybe a little bit strange. Along those same lines, the stories that the Hindu people tell and their scriptures and the stories of their gods can seem over the top to us as well. And just to give you a little bit of warning, if you have problems, Hindus believe in multiple deities. And they have often a lot of idols and pictures depicting their deities. So if that causes you to be uncomfortable, just be aware that I'm going to show some pictures here of Hindu deities. But one of these over the top deities is known as Ganesh or Ganesha. Ganesh is the god of good fortune and the remover of obstacles. If you go into a Hindu business, even if you go down to the Indian food restaurant today, you will find idols to Ganesh there because Ganesh is the god of good fortunes. Before the Indian stock market begins every day, they pray to Ganesh. Here's a picture of Ganesh. Ganesh is always depicted holding an axe because he's a remover of obstacles, so he chops them out. Always has a rope, which is to rescue people out of their troubles. Are there any other very obvious things about Ganesh that you notice here? He is holding a flower. That's the first thing you notice. That's beautiful. The first thing I notice is he has the head of an elephant. Now, am I the only one? Like, I don't notice that, people. That's right. That's beautiful. No. And he has four hands, exactly. So he has the head of an elephant, and he has four hands. Here's the story of the Ganesh head. Ganesh is not an elephant. Ganesh is a man with the head of an elephant. When the god Shiva attempted to come home to his wife Parvati one day, he found Ganesh guarding his home. Ganesh would not allow Shiva to enter into his home, so they battled in an epic battle, and Shiva won. In this process, when Parvati comes out of her home, she sees her son lying on the ground, dying. And she prays to the creator god Brahman and the sustainer god who I've lost the name. And these gods come together and they say that, yes, Ganesh can live, but you need to find another head for Ganesh. So they go out and they search the streets to find another creature with a suitable head to replace Ganesh's head, which has been smashed in battle. And all they find is an elephant. So they perform the first known xenotransplantation, and they take the head of the elephant and they put it on Ganesh. This is a story that the Hindu people will tell. So that's one interesting story, a little bit over the top. But my favorite story by far is the story of Hanuman. And Hanuman is a monkey deity. Now, the story is that Hanuman and his good friend, I'm looking for the name here, his good friend, it starts with an L, and it's a strange name, and it's hard for me to pronounce, Lakshmana. Okay, Lakshmana and Hanuman are good friends, and Lakshmana is injured in battle. Lakshmana is going to die unless he can get a certain treatment. And the only place that this treatment can be found is far away at a distant mountain, It's in the form of a flower. So Hanuman is sent to this mountain to find this flower to heal his friend Lakshmana. But Hanuman does not know which flower on this mountain he's supposed to pick. And instead of just grabbing a sampling of flowers or going like and saying, come back and saying, I can't figure it out, what does he grab? He brings the entire mountain back. This is a story of friendship. This is a story of dedication to one another. Now, if I was to ask Christians today about their scriptures, we would have different words to describe it. Some people would use words like inerrant. Some people would say infallible. Other people would say that it is inspired by God. But if you ask a Hindu about their scriptures and use those words, they would just kind of look at you like, what are you talking about? And if you ask a Hindu, like, do you actually believe these stories to have happened? They're like, that question doesn't make sense to me. Because for them, it's not about whether this really happened or not. The question is, what can we learn from these stories? How can we grow? How can we develop? How can we become more like that deity? So the Hindu deities, I apologize to all the Hebrew people that I keep calling Hindus. We Mennonites sometimes get called Muslims and sometimes get called Mormons as well. Some people are back there, yeah. it happens. I apologize. So the Hindu people, they have many different deities. Some people have numbered them as many as 330 million. Now, that number was applied from outside of the tradition, and actually what I hear said is that when a missionary went to India, they gave a rough head count of how many people were there, and they said, well, there's essentially one deity for every person, and they assumed that there were 330 million people on the continent, the subcontinent, therefore there must be 330 million gods. That's one way to look at it. There are 33 gods listed in the Vedas and the Gitas, which are kind of the equivalent of the Hindu scriptures. Some people will further boil it down and say there's really only three gods in the Hindu tradition. And others will say, well, there's only one god known as Brahman. He is the creator god. And out of Brahman, all other manifestations of God have come. Okay, sounds good. Now, if you go into a Hindu family home or into a Hindu community, if you go to India, you will find that many of these homes have three different deities to which they pray. They always have one deity that is their ancestral deity. They always have one that is their local deity based on the geography. Then each one chooses their own deity for their family. So many different deities, many different people choose different deities to worship. Now, about 10 years or so ago, Sonia and I went on a trip to Trinidad. And Trinidad is in the Caribbean, or the Caribbean, depending on where you come from. Which is it, Caribbean or Caribbean? Help me out here. Caribbean, Sylvia's got some experience there. Okay, we're in the Caribbean. All right, so we're in Trinidad, and Trinidad is made up of about 50% Indian transplants. 50% of the people lived in India, and they have moved to this island. They came for work as indentured servants. Now, in the church that we were visiting, actually, the church we were visiting was pastored by my friend Ganesh, who was actually named after the elephant-headed deity. So we're in Ganesh's church, and it's this beautiful cacophony of different colors and different backgrounds. And I'm preaching there this one day. You know, if you've ever been around a missionary, you will hear them tell stories about how you end up in these developing countries, and you go to church on a Sunday morning, and they ask you then to preach that morning, right? You've heard these stories? You didn't realize you were going to preach until you show up. I at least was given 12 hours warning. I was asked the night before church, Saturday evening, about 10 p.m., so we're expecting you to preach tomorrow. Thank you for the heads up. So thankfully, I'm here in this church, at Ganesh's church. They've given me a little bit of warning. I have my laptop with me, and I have some sermons that are stored away there. I had preached in this church the Sunday before a sermon that I felt really good about, based on Joshua 24, where Joshua rededicates the people. He calls them to rededicate themselves before they cross over the Jordan into the promised land. So I said, I'm just going to preach this one that worked really well at Stanton Mennonite Church. It hit home there. It's surely going to hit home here as well. So I go into Ganesh's church and I begin preaching this sermon, not thinking anything about the context. And I come to this passage, Joshua 24:14-15. Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your ancestors that your ancestors worshipped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." In this context, I talked about the gods that we serve, which include things like sports, include things like guns, include things like that. We serve these gods. These are our idols. But you go into a place where the people grew up in Hindu traditions, and all at once that means something a lot different. So just what do Hindu people believe? I want to spend the rest of our time looking at three different topics, three things that they focus on in the Hindu tradition. The first is karma, the second is reconciliation, and the third is yoga. What did I say? Reconciliation? I've been sick and I'm on like some Claritin or something like that. I apologize. It's all reincarnation and yoga. We're going to start with karma. Now, many of us have some experience with karma because of Boy George. You know about the karma chameleon. Some people, if that's not your thing, you know about... Did I have too many karmas? Some people know about karma because of My Name is Earl. Nobody here? Okay. All right, one or two people. Yeah. Woohoo! Excuse me. Some people's experience with karma in the Hindu tradition traces back to one central figure known as Apu from The Simpsons. Does that reach any more of you? One or two of you? No. Okay. So many people base their understanding of karma based on Apu, Boy George, and what was the third one I said? And My Name is Earl. Thank you. So those three things are our central understanding of karma. And I just want to tell you today that's probably not enough to make you an expert. But often when these things are depicted in our modern kind of our world today, we see karma as this thing about good choices leading to good things. So it's a cause and effect. If you do something good, if you, let's say, you mow your neighbor's yard, maybe karma will pay you back and you'll get a pie in return. But if you do something bad, if you kick a lot of dogs, like some people like to do, if you go around kicking dogs one of these days, you're going to get bit. So there's good things that happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. That's the way most of our society understands karma. But the Hindu understanding of karma says that at reincarnation, something different will happen to you. So if you live this life a virtuous life, if you live this life well, you will come back as a person higher up in the social economic system. But if you do something bad, you will come back in a lower position. Now, our society will sometimes talk about reincarnation, and it's almost funny because you've heard people talk about reincarnation, and it's always, you know, they think about the past lives that they've lived, and they're always like, "I was once the Queen of Prussia. You know, I was Napoleon. I have these latent memories of marching in Waterloo. Or I was Joan of Arc, and I helped Noah count the animals as they came on the boat." Nothing. Okay. People always have these understandings of reincarnation, but again, this doesn't quite jive with the Hindu understanding. Reincarnation for the Hindus is either a reward or a punishment for a life that you've lived. Now, this cycle of life, death, and rebirth is called samsara in the Hindu tradition. Can you say samsara? So, cycle of life, death, and rebirth. You do something good, you'll come back in a better position. You do something bad, you'll come back in a worse. It's not necessarily that you come back as a human. Sometimes you come back as an animal. And that's why Hindu people on large are vegetarians. Because you don't want to, let's just say it, you don't want to eat your relative. That's not a good thing. If you do consume your relative, you will probably come back in a lower level. Now, if you know your history of India, you've probably heard of this system as well. You're familiar with the caste system? Okay, the caste system says that there are different levels that people exist within. There are traditionally four different levels in the Indian caste system. I'm not going to try to say the Indian name itself. But the first one is obviously it's the Brahmin, the priestly order. This is the highest order because obviously all clergy people are viewed with respect and the utmost confidence and love and something like that. In the Indian system, the Brahmins are the highest in the system. The next are the rulers and the administrators. And then there are the artists, the merchants, and the tradespeople. And finally, you have the working class. Now, within each of these castes, there are subcastes. And in the working class, there's also the very lowest of the lowest. They're called the Dalits. The Dalits are the lowest of the lows and sometimes called the untouchables. These are the people that Mother Teresa went and worked with. These are the people that Jesus often spent time with as well. Now, within the Hindu understanding of reincarnation and within the Hindu understanding of karma, these people, whenever you die, if you do well here on earth, you will either move up or down in a system. The caste system is no longer recognized nationally by India, but it's still very much in place. And I've heard it said that this is one of the reasons why we see so much poverty in India. Because people believe that if you are a Dalit, you were born into that position for a reason. It's something that you did in your past life that caused you to be reincarnated into that role. So many of the people that are higher up, including the people like the Brahmins, the priestly people, they don't help the lowest of the lows. They don't help the Dalits because they see this as their punishment for something that they have done. We'll keep moving here. So we have this cycle of death and rebirth and life. And the Hindu goal is to reach this position known as moksha. And when you reach moksha, that means that you have lived your life as best as you can. You have done your dharma. You have done your duty. You've heard of dharma before? There's a television show. I keep coming back to popular TV shows. Dharma and Greg from a few years ago. Dharma is your duty. Okay, AD saw that one. All right. Dharma is your duty here on this world. And if you complete your duty, you will reach moksha and you will be released. And when you are released, you simply cease to exist. Is this blissful lack of existence. All right, we're going to end here on yoga. Yoga is simply a word that means discipline. And when years ago when I started doing these stretches, and this pastor was telling me that you can't do this because this is demonic, and I kept asking the question, well, I'm finding some sort of physical like release of this pain from this practice. I looked into it a little bit. And you know, yoga is more than just stretching. If you go into India, you will find these gurus doing this stretching, but they're also doing these spiritual kind of things during this time. It's also a way to cleanse your mind. You'll often find these gurus chanting to their gods and praying to their gods. It's a way of connecting mind and body and giving that to God as a discipline. But for us in the U.S., most of us will kind of, we don't do this as a prayer to Vishnu, or we don't pray to Ganesh or any of these other gods as we do these stretches. It's more about a physical activity to release this pain or gain more flexibility in our bodies. And it may even help your golf swing, for those of you that are wondering out there, to get a little more motion there. The passage that Sonia read to us from Romans chapter 8, Paul talks about how all of creation groans. All of creation, not just the people in it, the animals, creation itself, the earth is groaning because this is not the way it's supposed to be. He says, we ourselves groan as we await the redemption of our bodies. I think the biggest difference between Hinduism and Christianity, aside from all the deities, is simply that they see this life as a life to endure and to hope to come back to something better, to continue to move up slowly into some other position as somebody else altogether. But we as Christians, I mean, you look at yourself and this is what we got. You are going to come back as Jennifer Bradford. You're going to come back as Sylvia Yoder. But you're going to come back as yourself in a way that God intended you to be. Free from pain, free from suffering, in a world that God created it to be as well. Free from pollution, free from death, free from poison, free from suffering. Let's pray. God, we are here today and we recognize that we believe many different things. And the people around us, Lord, may look different from us. They may act different than us. They may be different from us. But we are called to love them just the same. Lord God, as we conclude this sermon series on the world's religions, we just pray that you help us to continue to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. Help us continue to pray for others, to learn from them, to learn from their practices, to learn how we can be better followers of Jesus Christ. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.